Are you ready to experience something extraordinary? Cultural gems in Croatia, ancient temples in Asia, art in Italy. We'll take care of everything. Flights, accommodation, excursions, local guides and all that planning. Travel department. Let's see more.
I'm Gary Cook, and you're listening to the Senior Times. And today, I'm talking to author Mary Rose Callahan about her book, The Deep End, which eloquently describes her growing up in a Dublin long gone. You're very welcome, Mary Rose.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Mary Rose, can I start by asking you, I mean, you describe this as a memoir.
Yes.
Why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote it. I think everybody should write a memoir. And I was one day when I was 13. We were all swimming in Sandy Cove, and my mother just jumped into the water, and I didn't know she could swim even. You know, she's very bad asthmatic. And she swims out to sea, and my father said it was really, he was there too, he was really worried. Anyway, that made me realize I didn't really know her, you know, in a sense. So I wrote it because I wanted to kind of bring her back, in a sense. That's why I wrote it. Because she's such a wonderful character. I think everybody should write a memoir because it's much cheaper than a therapist.
Oh. We'll get to your mother and your parents generally shortly, but just, I read it and I really enjoyed it. The thing I couldn't help feeling is that the Dublin that you describe is a very, very different Dublin than it is now. How would you describe the Dublin that you grew up in?
I'd say it was very class conscious and... But yes, it was a pleasant place, you know. I started off in Glasnevin, then Ranelagh. I would say Dublin was very it's who you knew, really. Mm-hmm. That was it, yeah. Who you knew, yeah.
So there was no such thing as a kind of this notion of meritocracy or anything. It was quite a rigid place.
It was quite a rigid
place. And a very, I mean, this would have been in the
1950s.
So this was the height of the time of McQuaid, Archbishop.
Very religious.
And, you know, people of a certain kind of means in a certain social order could pretty much do what they wanted.
Yeah.
Now, your story, in a sense, is quite interesting because I mentioned to you before we actually started that it was a kind of a reversal of the Irish-American story because your mother had gone to America and come back from America.
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit about her family background.
Oh, my mother was, her mother was one of the Amaras of Limerick, a famous family. And my grandfather was a poor emigrant, and he went to America as a child, and he
from Kerry was
from
it
Kerry yeah, yeah. And he got a job as a janitor. He wasn't rich or anything like that, and he got into Yale University and graduated cum laude or something like that, with honors. And he became a lawyer, and he was a famous lawyer, the Thaw case. He went to New York, and he became a criminal lawyer. And he then went into politics, and was by Woodrow Wilson actually made him an ambassador to San Domingo. But, of course, he wasn't suitable to be an ambassador. So
why not?
Because he was too flamboyant or something. You know, and this in the stories, New York Times, he received Spanish ambassador in his underwear, it said, something like that. But he was, and he said, well, it's a hot country down here. And he wasn't the ambassador type. And he married, my grandmother, I don't think, liked it. She came from Limerick, and... then they came back to Dublin and Pembroke Road, and started a movie company. They made films, Knock Na Gow, and several before the Rising came, and a lot of their films were up in smoke. There was a fire. But several of the classic ones have survived. There are silent classics now. And my grandmother...
Such as a matter of interest, which movies?
Knock Na Gow and Willie Riley and his Colleen Bawn. Two famous ones, yeah. Okay. There was a famous... shorts as well, for political fundraising. And anyway, then my grandmother died. And obviously she was the strongest partner because the film company collapsed after that. And people like Cyril Cusack, he was a child in it. And I met him in the street once, and he told me the tears, he was crying as a child, and he was really crying because he sat on nettles. And he was talked to me for quite a long time. And then also Michael McLemore, it was his debut. And there's an article about her in Columbia University on their website as a pioneer. But the film nowadays, the academics keep coming around. They've been here several times and they're, looking into her. The female feminist historians of film, so maybe she will get some recognition sometime.
So already in the family there was kind of quite a strong history of money, of political standing, and of an artistic, very strong artistic.
And I didn't really, we didn't know anything about our about their films or anything like that, but my father wasn't a literary type, but my mother was a very well-read person who hadn't been to college or anything. But she really turned me, she just introduced me to a lot of great writers when I was very young. I didn't know that. Like, I used to think Virginia Woolf, I used to be reading Virginia Woolf and people like that all on her own, she was a very intelligent person who was, didn't have an outlet for her, she used to say to me, women are second-class citizens. And she was very intelligent, but she wasn't, and I did have cousins who were, like some of the Amaras were writers, like Stephen Wren, and Pat Lavelle, like she was a cousin, and she was a writer, and I knew about Kate O'Brien, who her sister had married, my mother's uncle, and used to say in school, I used to say, she married my mother's aunt. Her sister is my aunt, mother's aunt, and that turned into her being my aunt. And the thing, I remember the nuns giving out about Kate O'Brien, because this is in Rathcarna, because they thought maybe she wasn't holy enough. I don't know, but anyway, it was. And then they used to say, she's Mary's aunt. She's Mary's aunt. It's quite funny, yeah.
So your own mother then went back to America as a very young girl.
After
her mother died.
As a toddler,
And you write a bizarre story about her nanny.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed it would be better if she threw her overboard. It would be better than having no mother.
This my mother told me that. Yeah, I don't think she made it up. No. And the woman was mentally ill, I think. And anyway,
though in a sense may be mentally ill, kind of trotting out a line that quite a lot of people might have believed. So she went to America.
They went back to America. He went back to being a lawyer. And he started off as a journalist, you see. And he was actually in Kilmainham, and he was sentenced to death because he went down to help the rebels, And then he was writing the grandfather. He was writing, he'd written articles about the Rising all over America and sent them all over America because he was a journalist, he was actually a reporter, and he started off life as a reporter before he became a lawyer. Yeah.
But wasn't there a suggestion that De Valera himself wasn't executed because he
was an American citizen? Yeah. That's certain, yeah. Some, I can't remember now. There's some other bit to that story about De Valera, but my grandfather got off because, I don't know, he got off because they couldn't shoot him because he was American, you know. But then they went to back, then my grandmother died, then they went back to America. He took three children back with him. They lived in New York, in Flushing, New York. I remember that. Then the Depression came. He went back to law. Then the Depression came. My mother said they drove down to Florida. And they had, you know, he had no income then, obviously, except from maybe his wife's income, you know, she left money to him. So my mother grew up in Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida. But she always said, when I'm 18, I'm going to Ireland. And then her father died when she was about 17. She stayed with a family, Mr. Wilson. She said her father had left them as her guardian. But she had to graduate from college, from high school. So when she graduated from high school, it was a year after her father's death, she came back to Ireland and did nursing in the Mater Hospital. And I have a photograph of her there, actually. She was a character. I mean, I was reading it yesterday. She was very, very, for a 20-year-old, you know, this is when she was 20, very with it, you know, like about women's, the role of women and feminism and all that.
At a time when it was not in vogue.
No, 1930s. Like, she came in the 1930s. And she was kind of the O'Mara. Her mother was O'Mara. She was kind of the orphan. And she used to go and stay with them in Kerry, in the west of Ireland. And on the way back, she met my father in a train. He invited her out for a drink, and she thought he was, you know, a workman, and she didn't want to go with him. And then she changed her mind, and at the station, and then he took her out to the Gresham, and she had a white lady. And he said, would you like another, finish that, would you like another white lady? That was some drink, I don't know. She tells the stories, like, she's a wonderful storyteller, much better than I am at storytelling.
The Gresham Hotel, of course, was at
that
point.
Oh, yeah, we would go rich, yeah. He was very much the man about town. He was not the most fastidious person, actually. So he had to be, he inherited these farms. And he wasn't a cattle dealer type, you know, he was like more of a, you know, man about town, you know, sort of like a flaneur kind of thing. And so they were very happy, very much in love. And, you know, the war, I said, what was the war like? She said, it was great. We just cycled all everywhere. And she was very happy, very much in love. And then things got gradually worse, you know what I mean, because he was mentally affected by a brain tumor. A benign thing, I don't know, anyway. So we just shelved that in the sense we never, you know, it was a great shock to me when he died of a brain tumor because it was a lesion, we were told, a brain lesion.
But you're saying this had affected him?
Absolutely, yeah. It disintegrated, like, his personality somehow, you know, and he changed. I remember him, you know, when he was nice and I loved him, this kind of thing. I really loved him and some of the others don't very much, but I thought, I think it had a big effect on us, you know, like, but they stayed together. And then my mother just couldn't stand it any longer, I think, and she went to England. I remember that when I was 15, when I went to the Irish college, she got me out of the way. And she got a job there, a very good job. Anyway, she came, you know, she'd send money back. And then, of course, we were living in Dunleary then, a rented house. The people were, they were actually religious, sort of a cult, you know. And Christian, they turned us out of the, that's on the side of the road. Your grandmother, I remember her coming from Nula, and Nula says that your stuff was on the side of the road. I said, I don't remember that. And
this must have been an incredible come down to you because, I mean,
it was terrible come down.
Your life was one of relative privilege. I mean,
one of privilege.
Iona,
we went to acting classes.
Ran a farm near the airport, what is now Ballymun.
It was a house, you know, it was an old country house, but we were high on, you know, what's the expression? We were well-off people. And that was class, kind of. The class was very much part. You asked me about Ireland. Class. Mm. We were middle class, I suppose. And it was very much it's different now, thank God.
But not just middle class. I mean, you were kind of very much connected with the you know, elements of the formation of the state, with the Irish-American My memory of families who, you know, even, you know, even had an American mother or father when I was growing up.
Yeah.
There was always something about them that seemed to be, you know, there was something vaguely exotic, as though they were somehow part of the, you know, the very special relationship between Ireland and America, as if they were elevated people, in a way.
Yeah.
You know, I always had that sense of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. My father had an MG. He had another car as well. And every time he bought everything in twos, I was starting to think, two cameras, two cars. Yeah. And he always bought two suits, my mother said, not one. You know, he was kind of... And then...
You have that great expression of flâneur, is it?
Yeah, yeah,
Which means what exactly?
It means actually, you know, we go into town, have a drink and chat with people, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, sort of... man of a chance, sort of... golfing. He was in Portmarnock. He played golf. Yeah, and gambler. And I said, How on earth, when I bought my first bottle of whiskey when I was 30, I was going on holidays with down the country with friends. So it was only £3. I said, well, how on earth did you get rid of so much money? Like, how could you drink? It's only £3 for a bottle of whiskey then. And he said, oh, he gambled. He was a gambler. Yeah, he's gambled.
So, which in itself, you know, member of Portmarnock Golf Club, gambler.
Yeah.
There's a certain social cachet. Then,
yeah,
you know,
that's what I mean, yeah.
Not many people could, you know, I'm sure people went to the bookies, but that was a different thing. You know, people couldn't afford to gamble in that way in place.
You had greyhounds too, yeah, and one called Pasadena Beach, I remember.
So you found yourself in this situation where you were thrown outside of the street, but also you were also in school. In Mandanville, as a younger teenager,
I was nine. I think, yeah.
In with Mary Robinson, I believe.
Yeah, she was. She came. I think my second year, she came, and she was. I was. She slept to the bed next to me. And there was a little hole in the, you know, it was a wooden part, sort of dividing us, and partition was the word. Yeah. And she then moved up to the other dormitory, but she was a very intelligent person. So it was very exclusive school, but I didn't realize that. You know, I thought, well, my brothers were in boarding school, and I was as good as them. Now I could, you know, I was in boarding school, but I always felt. I wasn't too unhappy, but looking back, it was very young age to go to a boarding school.
It certainly is. And I've never really known anybody who went to a boarding school at that age or at any age that wasn't in some way affected by it.
I know. I was affected by it. All the little things, like children, is so embarrassing for children. You know, like they're kind of bedwetting and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
I used to kind of, and nightmares. I had one of the terrible nightmares. That's right. But some of the nuns were quite nice, actually, there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was the culture like in the school? Was it encouraging or was it just
It was very much, we did French as young children. I think they were, most of the nuns were very nice, actually, you know. But it was very Spartan. Like one time, we had a little tiny bit of butter like that. And I remember each person had a tiny bit of butter. And somebody went to the dentist and someone ate their butter, the butter that was meant to be eaten by the person who went to the dentist. There's a big row about that. What do you think about that? Then I asked somebody who was being
the butter turf war.
Yeah. And I remember asking someone who was older than me, and I met her at a book launch or something. And I said, well, what did you think of the food? And she said, the people, that they were victims of the war. You know, that if they made a fuss about the butter, that was because we'd all come out of the war, like, in a sense. But this was probably 1953. And, of course, I'd never... And then I remembered the sprouts. had worms and the sprouts, like it, actually worms on the plate. You had to eat everything. So, and I asked another friend, and she said, yeah, you're right, they did have, but the food was very bad. But somehow they had this day, the end of it was called, the seniors would come around and pull the juniors out of bed. They had a great sense of occasion, I'll say that, the Sacred Heart nuns. And most of them were very nice, actually. So it wasn't really, and I was sorry to leave it because, you know, I liked being there somehow. I was very sorry to leave it. So it wasn't unhappy, really. But, you know, looking back, things were, you know, hard. It's hard to be nine on your own, you know,
yeah,
with all these problems, like, of your bladder, like, leaking from every sort of... that's what I found. You're a child, you know.
And then you went to...
And then I went to a day school for a few years because we were living in Dunleary, Monkstown, Sacred Heart, and I liked that also. We had a lovely teacher there called Miss Fortune. I remember she was fantastic, Miss Fortune, but she was very good. And she was, that's the first time I was read Shakespeare, for instance, you know, and I used to love the English and history. And then I was there for about from. Well, before that, I'd been to a few schools. You know, we moved around. My parents would actually send us to school, and then when the time came to pay the fees, we had to move, kind of thing. And the uniform, my mother used to say, another blasted uniform.
Sponsored by Expressway. With My Expressway, free travel pass holders can reserve their seats online at expressway.ie or at our ticket machines in stations.
Are you interested in trying a new smartphone but still a little unsure? Do you want a phone that offers larger icons with louder sound and an interface that has technology designed for seniors? Well, why not choose from the Doro range by simply visiting doro.ie. Doro, make friends with innovation.
So it was a very peripatetic lifestyle.
Yeah, very peripatetic, yeah.
And basically, your father was avoiding certain things.
Oh, yeah. He was
like James Joyce's father.
Very
actually.
Like Joyce. That's what Eilish and Gibbon, a writer, said. Mm. He's like Joyce. But Joyce never wrote about his childhood, really. She thought it was very Joycean, actually. She reviewed it. It was very Joycean because we were actually... You know, like when we left Dubber, that's the place where we lived, the farm. I only know from my diary, like I found my diary, we had a servant with us, you know, a girl to do the housework. Like they were, but then things gradually deteriorated. And my mother then came around and she wanted me to send me to school with Nuala. And,
So you left school, Mary Rose, around 1962. Okay. And what was the prescriptive path for you from the nuns? And what did you actually do?
There was no career guidance then, but I wanted to go to college and learn, you know, how to be a writer. Anyway, the relative who was helping us, one of the Amaras, wanted me to do typing. And my big regret is I didn't do it. Because my mother, I have to do typing. She said, no, you're not going to do. I said, she won't speak to me again if I don't do the typing. She said, well, I won't speak to you again if you don't go to college. But it was totally ridiculous because we hadn't got funds. Like, it was between, my brother inherited money when he was 21. So there was a gap there. But anyway, I spent the first year actually reading books at home. And then I did medicine for a year, but I didn't, I hated that. I thought, oh, God, no. My mother thought, actually, although she was very well read, she thought, why do you want to go into college? You can read at home, do something like a career. And anyway, finally, my brother, there was a bit of more money in the family then. My brother inherited money.
And who did he inherit from?
He inherited, because there was land tied up, like, and, you know, he was an entail thing, you know, like, so when he was 21, there was a scandal, really, because My father sold the land, his land, but he shouldn't have because he didn't. It was half my brother's, you know. Like, so there was a few years. Like I did first arts then in 1965. I got first arts, and then my father died while I was more or less during the exam. You know, I was very grief stricken when he died. You know, like I was just really depressed. There's nothing wrong with me then, of course.
And were you at this stage annoyed in any way with your father?
We were very annoyed with him, yeah, because we didn't know, like, he did behave, you know, we were very annoyed.
And do you think that the kind of opportunities and the money or whatever he inherited that was squandered because of his kind of addiction to alcohol, or do you think it was because he had a kind of undiagnosed brain tumor?
Oh, I'd say it's both, you know, like, yeah. Both, like, I mean, I'd say both, yeah. I think he was a drinker, you know, but...
And you must have been quite bewildered then.
We were all very bewildered,
wondering,
yeah.
Do we have money? Don't we have money?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very confusing kind of environment for you to grow up.
We weren't like working class.
No.
Somebody said to me something about, I said, we were very poor. And she said, but you were, class has nothing to do with poverty. It's, you know, it's, she said, this kind of sociologist. Yeah, that's not the word, yeah. We had a very difficult time, but we all survived. My younger brother developed mental illness, but I might have had it anyway. You know, he's dead now. He died 2 years ago, and it wasn't COVID, but, you know, it was from smoking, because he smoked because he was mentally ill. He's a lovely person. So that was very hard.
And your own mother,
yeah,
she did have... bipolar. She was diagnosed as having that. Was
she? Yeah, she did. Yeah, she definitely did. Yeah, she was. You know, did crazy things. But I don't know why. You know, then there wasn't much treatment. Do you know, like she was in and out of a hospital, really, and in between the escapades.
But this would have been in the very, very early days of any of that stuff.
Yeah, there was nobody knew anything about mental illness. I mean, really, they give you these pills, like, she was...
If you were lucky. Because some people will be thrown into some form of...
Asylum, yeah. Yeah, but she was... she met one doctor who seemed to understand her, yeah. She had a drink problem also, you know. But... she did have periods of long trying very hard and all that, but she was just you know, we all loved her a lot. She's a very loving person, and I suppose you're able to love if you have been loved somehow, you know, I think. But it was very hard, like very difficult, because she had great notions. You know, it would be much better to be sensible and go and do a typing course and then do it at night. That was my relatives who were suggesting that, which was good advice.
And as a matter of interest, why didn't you just do it?
Because I couldn't upset my mother, you know.
Okay, so what she said went.
Yes, yeah. She's a very strong character.
Yeah,
I mean, I suppose I should have just done it, yeah, and then not gone, you know. You know, I got very depressed after my father's death.
Yeah.
I wasn't mentally ill, I think. I was just a mixture of adolescence, you know, sort of everything happens together.
Yeah, well, yeah. You're losing a parent and also you're grieving that.
Yeah,
and
then
grieving
that was it,
whatever else had probably happened as well.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that you were in...
St. Patrick's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I felt like that was a refuge. It was a refuge, I felt, I must say.
St. Patrick's down in the end of the Liffey.
Yeah.
Okay.
So although now, it took me a while to get over it, actually. But, I mean, I just was very upset about my father. And I didn't know what that was or anything, you know, I thought. And they tell you, oh, you're depressed, you're, you know, all that. It's good reason to be depressed. Sometimes you have good reason to be depressed.
You mentioned something in the book, you know, it was kind of shocked me. It didn't surprise me, I suppose, but it shocked me. Was when you were a much younger girl being examined by a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
With kind of busy hands.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, was this had a standard norm of those?
No, I'd say he was, it wasn't standard, but I suppose it was, did happen. But I didn't know anything about sex, so I didn't know what he was doing. So I said to my brother, who was a doctor, was that, he said, yeah, it definitely is. So you do, that's very bad. And I think it did affect me, but, you know, I sort of shrugged it off in a sense, you know.
Well, it's the trust. It's
yeah, it's trust, yeah.
You don't expect...
trust, yeah.
No.
Yeah, you expect a doctor. I was playing netball and I hurt my finger. My mother said, go and show it to the doctor. And the next thing, you know, he said, oh, hop up there on the, you know, table. And then sort of,
yeah. You hear an awful lot about it, but it just... You know, the way...
Yeah, it was definitely inappropriate behavior.
So, Mary Rose, you went and you got married.
Yes, went to live in America.
Yeah, and you had a very happy...
Very happy marriage, extremely happy marriage, yeah. But he died in 99. Yeah, he died of lung cancer. Cigarettes, again. We came back, we lived in this house. We lived in Rathmines. We came home, I used to come home every summer. So to see my family, and that's when I got the idea of sitting in Bewley's, and there were people talking about a nun shoplifting, and I thought, that's a great short story, that. So I wrote a short story, and then that's how I got published. And they said, do you have any more short stories? No, I said, I have a novel. And then I bought it out to, it was actually Terry Prone, I bought it out to her. She was in the publishing company. And so that was it. Yeah, they published it a few years later.
And you were basically a writer at this point.
Yeah,
you've written a number of books.
That was my first book. No, I just, but my husband was very encouraging to me and great support. He really, I remember when he was dying, he said, you're not doing your writing, why don't you write, why aren't you doing your writing? I said, I can't write when I'm looking after you. So he was very, he was quite a distinguished critic, like of drama. Robert Hogan was his name. And he wrote a lot of books. And I lived in Delaware, New York, Delaware. It's a very nice town. And then it was like the 30s somehow, you know, like then when I went there. I made friends and it was, then it was human nature being what it is. I always wanted to be in Dublin. But, you know, it's like, you don't know when you're happy. You have to know when you're happy. But I mean, I knew I was happily married, but I sort of missed my family a lot. But I did like America, I must say.
And this book, The Deep End.
Yes.
How's it gone for you?
Oh, it's going well. No, it's going well, yeah.
Good.
It's available online. It's published by Morris Sweeney. He's a Cork publisher. And he has a company called Menma Books. And it's it can be got online. You know, you just there's a, if you Google it, you'll find it. And it's also in certain bookshops, in independent bookshops.
Well, thank you very much, Mary Rose. It's a kind of fascinating story.
Thank you.
Will phone poke a nuowet, and will canapi no fum nis orjowet, nis eskele husod, faker no phone intakata gwin, ancho, eg daro, and von klishta is dani, gidi gohan la hai glina, agus taskina, ta rod egen, gogachtina, ta nismo olis, eg daro.com.